Okay, hi folks, Graham Salomon here, Thursday night, with the 21st Century Jacobite. Sorry, we're running a little bit late tonight, with some connection problems, but we're up and running now, so it's all good, yeah. The situation in the world is confusing, to say the least. Just when things seem to be starting, well, as regards the COVID-19 thing, just when things started to be, tapering off, let's say, I switched on the mainstream news today only to learn that they're now saying that there's a second wave coming in, and there's like 20,000 new infections in the US. In fact, it's good. You know, all hell's breaking loose in the U.S. basically on the back of the riots and everything. You really can't believe that. You know, it doesn't make any sense. I think we were seeing the truth earlier on when we were seeing the numbers were starting to go down. Common sense was kicking in. There were several studies produced by respected doctors that said that the infection rate seemed to be exacerbated by people staying at home.
What you mentioned, they're trying to say that things are getting worse now, is that what you're hearing over there?
Yeah, absolutely. They're saying that there's a mad second wave sweeping across America and all hell's breaking loose. And I'm talking about the COVID-19, not the riots.
Okay.
That's what I'm getting on mainstream news. But these alternative scientists and the doctors that are speaking out, you know, who we're all familiar with, like Dr. Bhattar and Dr. Shiva and stuff like that, they're actually saying, no, it's not a good idea to self-isolate. That whole thing was a mistake. It appears to have a very, very low transfer rate outside. And it would appear to have a very high transfer rate at home. And, of course, people at home, they're not feeling too good, you know. You're not feeling very, positive or happy or anything like that. And, of course, that adds, we know that your psychological state, your feelings, how you're feeling, has a great bearing on infection rates and stuff like that. So, yeah, that's against, of course, what the WHO and the CDC and stuff were telling us initially. You know, these purveyors of fear, these fearmongers, that's kind of the opposite of what they were saying. But the official narrative is so confusing and, you know, so mixed up. You know, what they're telling us to do is just so ridiculous. It's paradoxical. It's just got us all running about like headless chickens. It's not working. And I'm sure that using this stats to try and discourage people from, you know, going out and protesting. I would assume that's what they're. I'm assuming that's what they're doing. The genie's out of the bottle now. So there was 18 murders today in Chicago. Now I know Chicago's a bit of a hot spot for you know, black on black violence and everything. But nevertheless, 18 murders in 24 hours is still the highest amount in the last, well, since the 90s.
Oh yeah, I was keeping an eye on that, Graham. The statistics don't really even compare to just locally keeping an ear on the police scanner, like I was doing a bit. And it was just amazing how frequently the significant calls were coming in for shootings and looters. And we had, on Sunday night, I heard an incident reported that police were being fired upon. Again, Monday morning, 11 a.m., police were being fired upon. So I just couldn't believe that. 11 a.m. Monday morning. And the riot in the hood, basically, in the ghetto neighborhoods were still that full of activity where the police were under fire. So, I mean, there, you know, there were agitators from these George Soros-funded NGOs, Antifa and the like, and they're trying to make it seem like all of the criminal activity and incitement to riot was by these white Antifa. That's part of the story they're trying to spin, but and certainly there were a lot of opportunists who just used it to let out frustration, being in lockdown to commit crime. And it's just amazing how much it continued on, as I say, well through Monday. So yeah, it was pretty crazy.
Yes, I've seen an interesting clip, Richard, and it was basically someone confirming from Hamas, that they were behind the Antifa riots and everything, and they would continue their work. Had you heard that one?
Well, yeah, a lot of reports like that definitely are out there. I mean, it's interesting now. This whole business of statues and symbolism, these people from a former oppressive white society, this is the new focus. Over in England, I understand they're focusing on trying to change the names of a lot of things, the statues. Here as well, they want to change the names of some of the military bases, some have names of Confederate soldiers even, and they just want to change all the history because of a narrative that white people are inherently evil and this inherent racism. But I mean, the way they're bringing up incitement in the media to riot now at this time, right when the lockdowns were ending, anyone who can't see the connection there is mad.
Yes, totally. But this report I was talking about, Richard, it was actually from Hamas leaders. Hamas leaders were saying that they were very much, you know, part of the social unrest, the rioting and everything. And they had cells operating all over the U.S. and they would continue their good work. They were kind of boasting about it. So, yeah, this is your Hamas sleeper cells. Or your Islamic sleeper cells, if you like, coming into play. We kind of expected that would happen.
Yeah. In Minneapolis, they are talking about wanting to dismantle the police, at least to a partial extent. Other people are getting up on their soapboxes across the country saying that, yeah, we need we need to get rid of all the police forces, and we'll just police our own neighborhoods. And we have some white girl saying, oh, well, I shouldn't have the police come if I have an incident at my home because of white privilege. You know, I don't deserve it. It's just people are getting so conditioned to follow whatever the corporate media stangles in front of them that day, like a cat with a ball of yarn, and just forget about all of the important pressing issues that these are obviously a distraction from.
It's absolutely crazy, Richard. I've never seen anything like it. I was watching a bunch of white people on their knees apologizing for what their forefathers have done. And it was sad.
Oh, yeah. The Democratic presidential candidate over here, Joe Biden, he's at the top of the... He's at the front of the line regarding all of that grandstanding with the getting on one knee. And they had a lot of people who were washing the feet of black community leaders and spiritual leaders. We had all these white people out in the center of some of the city squares washing their feet, trying to attribute black people to Jesus at this point. It's really crazy.
Man, yeah, it's...
Oh, and another thing on that note, Graham, at the funeral for this gentleman, I believe I heard it was somewhere out west, I want to say maybe Texas or somewhere, where they had the funeral for this Mr. Floyd. And they had a picture of him depicted at the funeral with a halo. I don't know if there may have been angel wings as well, but there was a halo, as if he's... Yeah.
Oh, man.
And we hear about his criminal record. I mean, he had held a gun to a pregnant woman's stomach while his buddies
That's
were
right.
robbing the place. And yet, no, he's a saint, evidently. He's an angel. A halo, no less, on the photo. I mean, if that's not in bad taste, I don't know what these people were thinking.
So they've sort of canonized them in death. That's unbelievable. You couldn't make that up, could you? Unbelievable. What's happening? The thing is, and I think it's really relevant and really important, George Floyd, the so-called victim, was quite high up in the Freemasons. He had a huge Masonic tattoo right across his chest. And also, the policeman, or the so-called policeman, there's a lot of doubt about whether he was even a policeman or whether he was a crisis actor.
Mm-hmm.
He was also a Mason. Now, you will never, ever get a Mason to kill another Mason. They'll deceive together because that's part of their oath. That they take, you know, that they will lie, cheat, and steal to protect a brother being another Mason. So you've got two Masons there, and it's highly unlikely one would kill another. And I think that's really important to focus on, because I think, personally, I believe that was just a theatre production. I think it was a show. I don't think anybody's actually died. I think he's just been moved somewhere else, get a little bit of reconstructive surgery, and a new life, you know, a new package, handsomely rewarded.
I'm with you on that one. Yeah, I'm thinking the same thing. I think this was completely staged, and that he's not even dead. You know, I recently finally went out of my way to acquire a copy of the New Zealand Christchurch mosque shooting video. It's still up places, you know, and I downloaded my own copy, secured my own copy finally. I'll have to send it to any New Zealand friends I might have. But that's crazy. Like $100,000 fine is what I remember hearing if you're caught in possession of the Christchurch Mosque New Zealand shooting video. And it is amazing that I haven't checked this out sooner. Everything everyone said is true and more. I couldn't believe how fake this thing is. I don't know if you caught it back last year. This was March of 2019. But it is. It's computer generated CGI sort of combination of the images where the shooter was with a green screen shooting with cartridges flying out, and then they superimpose everything else later on. I mean, you never see cartridges hit the ground. When he's shooting people, you don't really have any blood or anything. The people drop like sacks of potatoes and just freeze. You'd think people with adrenaline and everything, they'd be screaming, like clawing to crawl to the side or try to run away as after they're hit. Like, I mean, we've had a lot of people who have been in a lot of military engagements and otherwise pointing out how this just, yeah, there are so many ways this doesn't fly regarding how people react when they're shot, how many variations exist in reality, and how in this, it's just completely like those shooter video games in so many ways. It's insane how there's this music in the vehicle. Did you watch it back then? Do you recall checking out the video yourself?
Which video is that?
The Christchurch, New Zealand, Christchurch mosque shooting at March of 2019.
Is he run into the mosque? I remember it clearly, Richard. Is he run into the mosque shooting? There was actually a magazine. There was a magazine of fresh ammo lying in the hallway.
Really? I'll have to check it out again. I didn't catch that part. But they have all these writings, all these white painted symbols all over the gun to make it look like he's this crazy lone white supremacist, you know? And we've had, though, gun experts who've built a lot of weaponry, like rifles, and they say this isn't really anything that would exist as far as everything that's out there with gun components. This is definitely just an air gun. You know, this is just a child's toy, and you can tell by the shape of the components that there really isn't anything that actually exists out there like that, and they suspect that's why all the writings were put all over it, not just to make it look like a crazy lone gunman's device, but to hide a bit, conceal a bit, the fact that it didn't look like a legitimate firearm. And evidently there were at least two firearms. He returns to the car and then comes back with another, and also times where he's reloading. I find it very humorous. I couldn't believe how much they had a focus on the music inside his vehicle, because the first bunch of minutes have him in the vehicle driving to the scene, and you hear music he's putting on in the car. It's almost like a Quentin Tarantino film, you know? I mean, it almost seems like Quentin, you know, did a bit of the screenplay writing here for them, and then they just did a cheap, low-budget, like not even B-quality, but it's nowhere near Hollywood quality. It's just terrible piecing this thing together. But then when he returns to the vehicle after all the shooting is over, you can hear this music for some other song that's already been starting up, and it doesn't even sound realistic as far as how the music would sound when you're near the outside of the vehicle and getting in. It sounded like something that was spliced in, definitely, but they tried to make it seem so theatrical so that this new song is coming in right when he's returning to the vehicle, getting in, and then driving away, and rah. I mean, it was so hilarious. I couldn't believe it when I was watching, and then I had to double check after watching it. Wait, is this the actual New Zealand video that everyone talks about? And I did more research. I can't believe I didn't research it enough last year. It was just so obvious. So many of these shootings were just distraction for us and were staged. I just didn't even want to dissect them at the time. But I really had to double check after watching it the other day, after watching it finally in completion, and make sure that this was the video. That's how ridiculous it seemed. I really had trouble believing for a second that they actually tried to pass this off as legitimate. I suggest everyone check it out. You know, secure your own copy as well. Anyone who doesn't have it, write to the station, and I'll email you an MP4. No problem.
That's really interesting. Yeah, I do remember it, and I do remember thinking, this is just like an Xbox game. It was just like an Xbox game. And finding that magazine, as he ran into the mosque shooting, there just happened to be a magazine at his feet. That's exactly like an Xbox game, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
to the work. It was just
Find some more supplies while you're on the road, on the trail.
Yeah.
In each surreal. Level.
It's really surreal. I mean, who would have left a magazine lying in the hallway of a mosque? You know,
same people who would leave pallets of bricks conveniently near storefronts.
Yes, yes, I've seen a few of those in the U.S. and in Canada.
Right.
Yeah, I've seen a good one in Canada. I was actually in Montreal. The police were unloading small rocks, you know, about the size of your fist. Out the back of a police car, like two at a time, for some reason. I don't know why they didn't put them in a bucket and carry them to the edge of the street. But yeah, they were picking at two policemen. They were taking these small rocks, two at a time, and piling them up. And a guy confronted them and said, "What are you doing? You know there's going to be a demonstration here tonight. So why are you leaving piles of rocks? You know, why is that even a police job?"
Right.
And they just ignored him, and he said, "Look, listen, that's not your job. Why is the police leaving rocks at the side of the road in Montreal? Why is this happening? Why is this, what are you doing?" They said, "Oh, it's for the city. And the guy said, "Look, that was doing the film," and he said, "I've worked for the city. That's nothing to do with you. What are you doing? You know, what? Who told you to do this?" And they just totally ignored them. Yeah.
People are falling for the distraction. Okay, we're not going to talk about the virus too much, but it's still there. We need that vaccine as soon as it comes out. But, you know, we have this new normal, but we're going to focus on Black Lives Matter, and that's the playbook for now, you know, for summer of 2020 in the Agenda 21 playbook.
Entirely, but why is it so obvious, Richard? Why are they making it so obvious?
I don't think it's obvious to everyone. I mean, people who don't keep up with any independent media, you know, no independent media websites, news articles, radio shows like this, I don't know. You know, people who don't have any of that information, they just hear what's repeated on the corporate media. You know, they have opinions from friends maybe, but it must be a much different perspective, you know, when you just would sound completely nuts to suggest that there's something wrong with the... I mean, they can sense, a lot of them, I'm sure, that something just doesn't seem right with the official narrative, but they don't have any sources or people who are giving them alternative information a lot out there. You know, I mean, I don't know. A lot of people still are convinced that that word alternative I've never liked, because alternative media, I don't think that helps with credibility. And you think of the National Enquirer sitting on the shelf near the register of the store for just sensationalism, and that's what's in people's heads. And they tried to humiliate Alex Jones regarding Sandy Hook, even though there was a legitimate hoax perpetrated there, to further this idea that the alternative media can't be trusted, can't be validated with their information, and is in the tradition of things like The Enquirer. Unfortunately, no, the National Enquirer magazine or whatever. So,
yeah, not just Alex Jones, but Dr. Fetzer and
who is this? Introduce yourself, man.
This is Stephen. I'm sorry, Stephen Whitener here. Hi, fellas. Sorry,
Stephen Douglas Whitener.
I just had to. Yes, Stephen Douglas Whitener here. Yeah, you're right, Richard. They went after Alex Jones. Anybody that questions the main narrative, they want to ridicule you. And they've even gone beyond that when it comes to Dr. Fetzer and tried to take away his livelihood to cost him hundreds of thousands of dollars. And the other guy, Wolfgang Halbig, that started the whole. I think both of them have been sued over their questioning of Sandy Hook.
I mean, the last
it's ridiculous.
The last I heard, Wolfgang had won a lawsuit, but he had been forced to take his website down. And more recently, I know there was a lawsuit that Alex lost, and that may have been in conjunction with Wolfgang. So they may have had another suit where they did lose after having one where Wolfgang did win. So, of course, they're just going to keep trying to come at you again until they get it in their favor. I mean, you know, the establishment has all the cards in their court.
Yeah. I've seen some pictures of this cop, this supposed cop, that looked very, very much like someone.
Let me just apologize.
Andy Hook.
Sorry, let me just apologize for that mixed sports metaphor there, having all the cards in their court. But go on.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. You know, that whole thing ties together. And you're right. I agree with what you were saying about so many people. If they don't listen to the truth, if they don't listen to actual journalists, but depend on the proper corporate propaganda to get their information, if they depend on that media, then they're going to be fooled by this. They, you know, they call it, don't call it programming for nothing. These people are programmed. I believe that we've reached the point in the West where we are the Soviet Union circa 1990, where that was the year that they locked Gorbachev up in Crimea and tried a coup on him. You know, that was, and at that time, the people in the Soviet Union knew that whatever came out of Pravda or TASS, the news services they had, was complete bull. They knew that it was a lie. And people, most people now, if they pay any attention, know that what comes out of CNN, MSNBC is just a lie, that it's propaganda for the military industrial complex or for, you know, the Federal Reserve or Zionism, for corporations, not truth, not journalism. And I had an interesting experience this week at a mechanic's. I went to get my brakes and an oil change. And this young guy, I mean, he looks like a kid to me. He may have been 30, you know, he may have been in his early 30s, but kid to me. And he just struck up a conversation, and he said he'd never paid attention to any of this stuff before. You know, he didn't pay attention to the news. He kept his business going while the lockdown was in. But I started telling him all the things that I had learned, and, you know, he said, yeah, I believe you. He said, I don't think any, you know, I think things are not the way they tell us. And for the first time in his life, he really was paying attention to this. And then there were two guys. I showed him the pictures of the cop, how they didn't match the mugshot, and told him some of the discrepancies with George Floyd. And you know, we discussed Sandy Hook and 9/11 and the virus and things. And he was in full agreement. And he ended up getting my name so he could follow me on Facebook. And then the man who ran the shop and his mechanic who was doing the work on my car, they were both two black guys. And he heard me talking to this guy, and said, and I showed him that picture of the cop, and he went and showed it to his mechanic, and they were wide awake. And they said, you know, somebody out there, somebody up there, I think they said, somebody up there wants us to be enemies and to fight each other so we don't, you know, overthrow them. And I mean, that was kind of encouraging, that enough people that I just run into in the street are starting to wake up to this. I guess the only hope we got is that the deep state and the cabal, whatever you want to call it, the ones that have been running all of these operations, have jumped the shark with this one. You know, Bill Gates will never be able to go back into the shadows again. People are hip to him. You know, anywhere you see Bill Gates on Twitter or his Instagram, 99.9% of the comments are vicious stuff like, we're not taking your damn vaccine, and you need to be tried for war crimes and stuff. There's, you know, over and over people say that. And I would guess that the positive comments are people that he's hired to make them.
Well, you know, so the most recent stats I'm hearing is about 50% of Americans aren't going to be interested in this vaccine for coronavirus, for COVID-19, whatever they want to call it. This RNA vaccine, which is going to permanently alter your RNA, your immune system, and permanently compromise it in the process. So we're going to have a lot of pushback, and I'm sure in Europe as well, as much as they're trying to just say it's just going to be, well, no question, forced on everyone. I'm sure a lot of people, as we have so many becoming aware of the vaccine dangers in this country and spreading the information to friends and family, that's, I'm sure, happening overseas as well. There has to be a threshold. And these people are definitely are definitely playing with live electricity on this one.
Yeah,
that's the best way I can put it.
Graham, let me ask you, what do you think the number of people in the UK is that would refuse the vaccine? Do you think it's as high as half?
I think it's probably getting on for half. Yeah, I really do. The thing is, the flu vaccine got a really bad name here. It really did. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people were very sick with their seasonal flu vaccine, and word spread really quick. You know, there was kind of online blogs that got nothing to do with the truth movement. You know, just maybe, I don't know, car clubs or, you know, local road report pages on Facebook and stuff. You know, people would start sharing, stories really about, you know, personal experiences about the flu vaccine, and it's bad. It's really bad. And people are really starting to say, look, wait a minute, why do we even need vaccines? And people who have been refusing vaccines all their life and their children are remarkably healthy. And people are really waking up to this fact. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you another question along those lines. If in the UK, if you do take a vaccine and you're injured by it, say you get Guillain-Barré syndrome or something that's obviously caused by the vaccine, and you go to sue, are you able to sue the vaccine manufacturer there? Because in the U.S., we can't. They have indemnity.
Oh, I can't believe it.
Well, yeah,
we have a vaccine court here. I can't believe that it's any easier for the people there. I have to believe that it's just as impossible to sue these companies.
That's what I would think, too, but I don't know that for a fact.
Are you aware of...
You're absolutely right. They've made it. They've made it very difficult, Stephen. You know, you can technically, you can sue a vaccine company, but realistically, in the real world, it's very, very difficult and extremely costly. And it's only, you know, you generally won't get an ordinary lawyer to touch it. You'd have to go and get a barrister. Which will cost you like, you know, £200 an hour or £300 an hour or something.
So they're protected, but the people that they give their shots to are not. And that's exactly what Bill Gates wants for his new vaccine worldwide. He said that there would be at least 700,000 people who would be, quote unquote, harmed by this vaccine that he's developing, and that they needed to indemnify, you know, protect the company that made it. And, you know, he's telling people that right up. No wonder half the people don't want any part of it. I don't know. There are a lot of people waking up, and I think perhaps they rushed all of this. You know, I saw there was an interesting report that Catherine Austin Fitz and James Corbett put out last week. It was on both of their channels. I think Catherine Austin Fitz has the thing called the Solari Report, and James Corbett has a YouTube and a website, and they went over a lot of this. And back in September, the financial situation was such that, you know, they were putting nuts money into the repo market. The Fed was pumping all of these billions at the time, and it's up to $1 trillion a day now into the repo market to prop everything up. And that they made the statement they thought that this virus was rushed out, that they were really still planning on it, that they didn't want to have to put it out, but things were coming to a head so fast that the plans that they've made have been rushed, and that, you know, enough people are waking up. The thing I was going to say about her, she said that back when the H1N1 virus came out, well, she said the swine flu, but I believe that she was referring to the H1N1 as the swine flu back in 2009, and they had been talking about making vaccines mandatory then. The Obama administration had you know, floated the balloon, but enough people would say, okay, there's going to be a gunfight if they come try to give me a vaccine, that the NSA, and the NSA is listening to us, they listen to everything, and their AI, you know, gathers all the information and the data. They, at that time, they decided, well, we can't push this too far. If we push it too far, we're going to set everybody off, and they backed off a bit. Now, 10 years later, they've been working with the companies and with the schools and with the individual states to try to mandate vaccines more, and I think that they've come out with this now because of that. But even with that, back in December, there was a big UN conference where the doctors all met up at the UN, and people had put out undercover footage from there where the doctors all around the world are starting to question the safety of vaccines. I mean, they're waking up to them. The doctors that have been, you know, giving them for years, they were all talking about how there's no study of all of the different adjuvants when they're used and combined together, that they don't believe that they're safe. And I believe that's what scared them to the point of pushing this too quick, that they launched either this hoax or this virus too fast and not weren't really ready for it, because it's a sloppy, sloppy job. You look at the event 21 or 201, whichever it is, that tabletop exercise that they ran at Johns Hopkins back in October, at the same time that the supposedly the virus was released from Wuhan or escaped or appeared, however it happened, it's traced back at least that far. And I don't know. I hope that they've launched this too quick, and enough people are going to wake up to it. And I believe that was happening, and that they came to find out that, yeah, there's a lot of people who weren't buying this, especially when it came to the point that people were going out in the street and saying, end the lockdown. You know, this is number one, a hoax or a fraud, and number two, you don't have the right to lock us down. You're violating our constitutional rights. There were peaceful people that were carrying weapons, protesting this, and the media called them domestic terrorists. And now we have literal domestic terrorists taking over part of Seattle, and the media is mum and doesn't say a word about them. I mean, that just really does expose to the normal person who hasn't really been paying attention to this over the years, that, well, look, why isn't the media, why did the media call these peaceful people, you know, domestic terrorists, but they're not even mentioning these real domestic terrorists? I think there are enough people left who can still put two and two together and come up with four that maybe we do have a chance. You know, I was feeling pretty down about this whole situation for weeks, but that conversation I had at the mechanics day before yesterday, that encouraged me a good bit. I think that a lot of people are waking up. It's just, I think that things are going to get very dangerous very fast now.
The thing is, Stephen, I think it's important to mention this part. Big Pharma, a lot of these people are heavily into the occult. And the fact that they're using calf blood, monkey brains, worm ovaries, dog kidneys, and human fetal tissue to make up some kind of brew to inject into us. I mean, it's nothing short of witchcraft. That's what it is.
I agree with that. Yes, I agree with that. Absolutely.
It absolutely is.
And because,
yes, but listen, because they're using, you know, like I say, calf blood and monkey brains and worm ovaries and stuff like this, this is all of these things have got a particular DNA. And that's the level they want to attack us at. They want to attack our DNA. And this is witchcraft. That's what it is. We've got to call it for what it is. It's witchcraft, and that's a witch's brew they're trying to inject into us.
That's definitely an evil alchemy going on. And this newest technology, the RNA vaccine that literally changes our DNA, that they want to turn us into genetically modified organisms. They're not satisfied with stopping with just changing our food around and our animals. They want to do it to us. And it is. I believe you're right. I believe it's purely satanic.
It really is. And it's like the old traditional witch's brew, except they don't want us to drink it. They want to inject it into our bloodstream.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep, I agree. I agree with you. But the people don't have to understand it on that level to understand that it's bad and that's not something that they want. I mean, we can relate to it on that level, but, you know, there's a large part of the population that probably has been taking flu shots over the years and listened to their doctors. And now they see that they've been told 2 million people are going to die and locked up in their houses. And, oh, there's even worse than this. There was a nurse that came out today, or yesterday maybe, because the video is come out today, and I believe she's going to be on Tucker Carlson tonight, this nurse who videotaped them literally killing people who were healthy and didn't have COVID-19. They came. This one person I remember, she was a 37-year-old man, and he came to the hospital with respiratory distress, basically a panic attack. He'd been locked in his house. He's afraid of the virus. He comes to get checked, and they check him twice. He's negative. You know, there's nothing wrong with him. But they still marked him positive and put him on a ventilator and killed him. I mean, these ventilators that they have, they're just weapons to kill people with. There's no reason for them to use that, and especially at the setting that they have. The World Health Organization had instructed hospitals to turn the setting on these ventilators up 30% higher than ever before, and it blows people's lungs out. And it doesn't work, you know. The ventilators are – the people go directly from being just sick in bed to a ventilator, and there's so many other technologies that they use to assist people if they're short of breath, give them oxygen. I sleep every night with a CPAP, you know. That's a continuously pressurized airway protection thing. It keeps me from having sleep apnea. That helps people breathe and rebreathers. But when it comes to putting a tube down somebody's throat and sedating them so that you can pump their lungs for them, that's like last resort technology. But they're going to it right away. And the reason they're going to it right away is because they're getting paid to. You know, the Medicare and the government are paying them $30,000+ a shot for everybody that they can put on a ventilator. And we saw Cuomo out there begging for more ventilators. It was basically like he was begging for more weapons to kill people. I mean, that's really what's going on, that these people are committing a genocide against us, a eugenic culling. Yeah, that's what's happening. And there's some people that are not going along with it. A lot of these nurses are not happy, and they're not going along with it. They're very upset about it, and they're starting to speak out. And they need to be supported. I mean, that's very important what we do with this media, because nobody else – well, I don't know. That's not true. I mean, Alex Jones and Tucker Carlson are giving her a voice now, finally. We've been speaking about this for the past 2 months. Finally, somebody in the quote-unquote mainstream media is paying attention and giving her a voice. So I hope people are going to wake up to this, man. I do. I'm not going to shut up about it. I'm not. It really inspired me after talking to those guys. Everywhere I go now, I try to start a conversation just to bring it up and see where people are, what they think, what they're feeling, and try to feed them whatever the next step. You know, wherever they are, I say, well, did you know this? You know, did you know that guy Floyd was a Mason, or, you know, that they worked together. They both worked at the same club, the supposed cop they'd worked for 70 years. Or I'll tell them about, well, if that vaccine you take, if you get injured, who do you think will be sitting on the other side of the table when you go to court? You know, there's always that next little tidbit, that next step in their awakening that I can hand to them. And I've been concentrating more on that. Very encouraging, guys. I mean, I'm glad to be fighting this fight with y'all. We've been doing this for years, and hopefully the rest of the world is going to wake up now. I don't know. I do believe that things are getting very dangerous, though. This thing in Seattle, this taking over 7 city blocks, I mean, that is the next step. That's military operations taking over territory. And if we don't stop that now, if somebody – where are these militias, okay? There was a militia that went and took over that federal outpost in Oregon. Why aren't they in Seattle taking that land back, you know? Man, if I was younger and closer by, people have got to fight back. We can't wait for Trump to do it. We can't wait for the military or the police. The police are standing down and leaving. I don't want to abandon everybody up there, you know. They're Americans too. It was like a year ago, Graham, that you had that program about the film Seattle is Dying. So Seattle has been in dire straits for a while, but now they literally have taken it over with a military force and set up checkpoints and keep, you know, yeah, that's next level. That's way beyond the homeless population exploding and all.
And Seattle's got a... Seattle's got a major drug problem downtown, isn't it?
Yes, very much so. And it's been that way for a while.
Yeah,
I wouldn't
OxyContin.
be surprised. Yeah, and well, OxyContin and methamphetamine as well is bad there. It would not surprise me if other places around the country who have similar problems were taken over in the same way. You mentioned Hamas saying that they had cells, and yeah, there are sleeper cells here for different other international terrorist groups, and I believe that they picked Minneapolis because of Keith Ellison's ties with the Muslim Brotherhood there. That was the place they picked for a reason. I saw 2 days ago that they were trying to find a story. They floated a story about a Trump supporter doing something to attack a Muslim girl. And I don't know, it has not gained traction, but they're trying to get a story like that to make it politically difficult for the Trump administration to go in and take out these Muslim enclaves, these no-go zones where they're all armed and want their own, basically their own section, the way Seattle has. I believe that's the next step that they're going to take, is to try to take over other places like they have Seattle, as well as to get the Muslims involved too, to get the controlled Muslims, the ones that the CIA runs as terrorists. And I don't think that just the average person that's a Muslim goes to a mosque is necessarily going to be involved with this, but they'll say they'll allow it to happen. You know, it's a very scary time, but I do see some hope that people are waking up.
Yeah, listen, Stephen, did you, I think it was yesterday, did you hear what Trump tweeted about the left?
What did he tweet now?
He tweeted that the left had got so, had gone so far left, they were now eating their own young.
Oh, yeah, okay, I did not hear that, but that's the truth. That's
That's what
absolutely right.
he actually tweeted that.
Oh, I'll have to look that one up. I haven't read that yet, but I agree with that completely. That's what they've done. These abortion mills they have, they're practically just human sacrifices, you know? That's like they're
Yes.
sacrificing the kids to Baal there and cuts the kids up. They've admitted that they're chopping them up and selling their parts. And we've
Wow.
let that go on. We've let that happen. We
Yes.
have let them do that, and we let them bring the drag queens into the preschool, and bringing the pedophiles into the libraries. Some people
Yeah.
stood up against that. We have been trying to stand up against that, but Facebook groups of parents who are concerned about the drag queen story hour at their school or library get banned from Facebook. They get banned as being hate and hateful people or white supremacists. It's ridiculous. If you go out and you protest the lockdown, then you are literally trying to kill your grandma and you're a white supremacist Nazi. But if you go out and loot and burn, and get white people to force white people to kiss your boot, then you're a peaceful protester. And you're like that guy with the halo, the one that just died, George Floyd. It's complete inversion of reality. What's evil is good and what's good is evil. And that's the world that we live in today. Very upsetting. Yeah.
Yeah, they've turned it upside down, haven't they?
Very much so. And
Absolutely.
I just can't hold my tongue anymore. I mean, I'm glad I have I'm able to speak on here, but I'm not able to hold my tongue just in public anymore. I don't want, I'm too old and in too bad a shape to go down and participate in these protests and confront people there much, but if I had some company, I would do that. It's just a daily thing. I have to keep this in my mind all the time. I try to get escape from it occasionally. I enjoy the grandkids and all, but that's what inspires me to keep doing it, because this contact tracing thing that they're coming up with, the World Health Organization has even said that the goal of that is to go in and separate kids from their family if somebody tests positive. And they want to come in and take your kids. That's
Yep.
really what they want to do. And I don't, not, well, not over my dead body. And I think it's come to that. That's the way it's going to play out, I think, in the next year between
Well,
this now and, yeah.
Stephen, they also are starting to say that.
God, I'm on a show like.
I'm sorry, Graham.
Sorry, no, someone just came in there. Sorry, Richard.
I was just pointing out on that note that Stephen mentioned, We have a lot of people also speaking out against homeschooling now, especially with this economic lockdown we're under, where a lot of people have already taken to homeschooling. A lot are realizing, hey, I might want to keep this up. Actually, I'm not really comfortable with what my children have been indoctrinated with recently in recent years in school anyway.
Yeah.
And so we have a lot of people on the left coming out, trying to now speak out against homeschooling, saying, oh, wait, no, we have to ban homeschooling. Otherwise, these parents can raise children to be white supremacists.
Or moral.
Yeah.
But that's the main thing they're using, Graham, is white supremacists. Is that's the big buzzword. And, you know, that's like the biggest evil perpetuated right now in Western civilization. Because it's that slippery slope to pointing at the tribe eventually. So, but
the
it's
left
just
has
amazing
got more and
how,
more extreme, though, you must admit. It's got,
they don't want
the
any.
America has imploded with, with immorality, really, isn't it?
Well, absolutely. But, I mean, they don't want any of the parents' values to be passed on and instilled in the children anymore. That's part of this whole communitarian, socialist, it's really all just communist, a sort of indoctrination of the school system. I mean, they're trying to completely redesign the school system according to Marxist sort of programming, conditioning. And it's very disturbing because, I mean, children now, they don't really want freedom. They want security. They want equality. They don't want nature and freedom, including the freedom to fail in business. But
exactly. Equality, that's the buzzword they use. You can make everybody equal if you make everybody a slave.
Good luck having a good, decent product in technology anymore out there when there are no competitors that you're trying to make a better product than. With all these monopolies, I mean, they don't understand how much, you know, the ability to fail makes people try harder and give the people a better deal for their money. It affects everything regarding the productivity, the attitude of the people and the products.
That's been another major theme of this whole thing, is to wipe out the competition of the big box monopolies, wiping out mom and pop or anybody
who can
compete against them.
Well, yeah, they want the masses to stagnate from now on and just have this working class society, and then far above them, separated by a large moat in the castles, you know, would be the privileged few who will still try to advance with technology and expect that everything can continue advancing in civilization with only a few contributing to it, none of whom want to get their hands dirty. It's really not realistic, is it?
No. It's a Hunger Games kind of mentality, a society the way that they describe it there, where you have the peons, the slaves, basically, in the different districts, and then you have a military class that controls all of them, and then you have the elites living in the city. Those are the three classes that they want, those three castes. And yeah, you're right. Society would stagnate completely.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah, the 1% and 99%.
And this thing goes back, the part in Seattle reminds me of what I have read and seen about the Paris Commune in 1871, when they had their own section. The communists had taken over part of Paris, and the war with Prussia was coming to an end, and Prussia was winning, and then they all fell back onto each other, and there were the things that went on in the Paris Commune were as bad, if not worse, than what happened with the Jacobins and the Reign of Terror and the French Revolution. And those are the same kind of things that can and will happen in Seattle and these other areas if we allow those types of people to take them over again. They're armed. They have nobody to stand up to them. They're bullying all of the store owners inside there. The things I went and I looked at a video about the Paris Commune again. That it's on Vertigo Politics, a couple of times, and the things that they mentioned that went on in the Paris Commune are starting to happen already in Seattle. I've seen where they're going around and extorting money from all of the business owners or the people that live there. And it's going to degenerate from there. Eventually,
the reason they like that buzzword equality so much is it goes against nature fundamentally. I mean,
yes.
Communists, their ideology is one of trying to resist nature for as long as possible until the inevitable overwhelming end to that good night, basically. I mean, trying to just distribute everything as much as possible, ignore any differences among anything, among people, among conditions, abilities, and no matter how much productivity or not any one nation or person has, just spread it out evenly regardless, whatever we have, until eventually you wind up with a complete deterioration and collapse, just like in Rome.
That I'm reminded of the story about the real story of the first Thanksgiving when the Puritans came over in Plymouth, and for the first year they all took everything everybody grew and produced, and they put it all in a storehouse, and then they distributed it back out to each other, and everybody went hungry. Nobody, you know, they're going to take it anyway, so nobody cared much about their crops and their garden. So they, you know, the storehouse was basically empty that first winter, and they said, well, a lot of people died. I forget how many died that first time, but the next year they said, okay, you can grow as much as you want, and then you can keep and trade it with each other. And that second year, that when people were able to keep the things that they produced and trade them amongst themselves, there was a surplus, and they were able to even invite the neighbor Indians in for a big meal. And that was the original story of Thanksgiving, yeah.
And people have already been getting enticed with these communist pitfalls, sand traps, I don't really know how else to describe them, but, you know, once you start getting sucked in, you can't really get out. I mean, people are already more comfortable on their unemployment payments than what they were making due to this economic lockdown. They don't want to go back to work. Trump, or we have articles where Trump and his administration are toying with the idea of basically bribing people to try to get them back into the workforce initially. That's how bad it already has become with the unemployment payments, which are, in many cases here in the U.S., larger than the people were making. And they are talking more and more about universal basic income here. Graham, maybe you could enlighten us how much that is already in effect across the U.K. and Europe, this universal basic income.
I've been speaking about it for years, Richard, and they've got two numbers. They've got a minimum wage here, which is, I think it's $8.40 or $8.60, and they've also got living wage, which is the actual minimum you need to live on, and I think that's like £10.30 or something like that. So they're campaigning now to bring everybody up to, even people on benefits, to a living wage, so they can actually, afford to rent a house and feed himself and everything. Yeah, that's basically it. But I know it's similar in the U.S.
Everyone's losing
Young business owner, I'm sorry, go ahead, Richard.
I'm just saying, everyone's losing their incentive through more and more of these policies, and the children getting brought up with this sort of conditioning. No, go on, Stephen. Please.
Yeah, that young business owner I was speaking to at the auto shop, he said that people didn't want it. They were making more on unemployment, and he could have earned more on unemployment, but he wanted to keep his business going and wanted to keep working. But a lot of his friends have said, no, I'm making more on unemployment than I did when I was working. And so that just seems like it's designed to completely destroy our economy. It started to come back, this trade war with China was coming to an end and manufacturing was coming back to the U.S. I mean, the stock market's a rigged game, I know, but it was way up there. And, you know, it looked like we were going to get business come back to the U.S. And that's when the virus came out, right then. And it's interesting that when they finished the deal, the trade deal with China, that they put out in there that, that everything that they had agreed to was null and void in the event of certain emergencies, and one of them was a pandemic. I haven't heard that mentioned lately. I mean, I know that China is there's a huge war going on, I believe, worldwide between us and China, and it just it's been happening since last March, probably, and that all this is it's involved some way on the level that I can't follow and don't understand.
Well, the best way I think the best way to understand it is that if it were a purely economic war, the U.S. wouldn't have a chance against China. So that's why we need other factors in this war.
Yeah.
Would you say?
Yeah. At the moment, it's trade-based.
Yes. Well, and it could be that there's biological weapons that have been launched. I don't know whether that was part of that war or not, but it certainly the circumstantial evidence is there that the virus was part of it. And I've been hearing a lot of rumors from different people on YouTube, basically, that said there's a lot of Chinese troops down in Baja in Mexico, although I have not found any proof of this. I don't know if that's the case or not. And people have said the rumor is that China plans to have enough mass casualty events in China to create a wave of refugees that they want to send to the west coast of the U.S., as well as to these ghost cities that they built in China with nobody living there. And, you know, those are just rumors. I don't know. I don't know if that will happen. I mean, it does seem plausible, but I don't know. I think it's more likely that things will spread from city to city, from the Democrat-controlled cities where they do have all those drug problems and where the police are outnumbered and outgunned, that they will stand down and will have other zones in the middle of the cities that will start to look like the former Yugoslavia, maybe, or Ukraine. You know, even Syria, if they want the U.S. to look the same way that those did. I remember when Wesley Clark had that paper with a list of countries that the Pentagon had said they were going to take out over the next 5 or 10 years, and they've gone down and taken out just about every country there, with the exception maybe of Venezuela and Syria. They haven't completely taken it out, but he failed to put us on the list. I believe that the U.S. was at the bottom of that list, and that they're coming for us now.
They used to make a big deal every time the national debt went up by $1 trillion, but it's just in the last 3 weeks, it's went from 24 to 26 trillion, the national debt.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I remember the first trillion. Ronald Reagan was in office, and that was the first time the national debt had reached $1 trillion, and that was just considered absolutely insane, and now it's $26 trillion. And that's a misleading number, because we also have about $80 trillion of unfunded liabilities that with the Social Security and the Medicare and things that have been promised that they have no way to pay for. And then on top of that, there's the corporate debt. And there are all these derivatives. You know, I don't know exactly how all those things work, but they brought it about with the last financial collapse, where some kind of default credit swap, if the price goes down and collapses, a certain small number of people just make tremendous profits. And that somehow fueled the last collapse we had, with when Lehman Brothers went under and all. I've watched a video documentary about that called the Big Short, I believe is what it was called. It was not just a documentary. It was made kind of like a movie, but it went over what what happened then when everything collapsed in 2008. And that's when the too big to fail was floated. All these huge banks and huge corporations, well, they're too big to fail. And just that's ridiculous. They're too evil to fail. You know, they're too powerful. And no matter what evil they do, they never are held accountable.
And that's exactly what is echoing right now, except they have the perfect scapegoat, blaming it on this pandemic, which really isn't anything near a pandemic in reality, as far as the science.
I think it's just a lie.
Exactly.
Stephen, that number you spoke about, the unfunded liabilities, that's actually up at $148 trillion.
Oh, wow. Okay, $148 trillion.
Unfunded liabilities, yes.
Well, there's no way that, I mean, all the only way that they will be able to fund them is to just create more worthless dollars, create more money. And more money they create, then the less that it's worth, you know?
Stephen, the Federal Reserve is the obvious solution. I mean, it's amazing people are indoctrinated this much to accept that as part of the paradigm of this country now. And to have such cognitive dissonance regarding any sort of information to the contrary on just the very nature of a loan you can never pay back because there's not enough money created into existence for the interest.
It was created that way from the beginning.
Yes.
So that's the way they created it in 1913.
So each time,
it never would be able to pay back.
So each time, for people out there who don't understand completely, each time they create more money for the populace, they write that figure in as debt plus interest, which they do not create. And that cycle repeats. So every time, they never create the money to pay the interest. Even if someone were able to be in a good enough financial situation as far as the people, when it all winds up more and more to the very few, we have right now underway the single greatest transfer of wealth in all of history. And this is all under the guise of this pandemic, but it's not.
Yes.
It's not justifiable, it's not really that. It's simply redistributing wealth. They're tired of trying to con us out of it the old-fashioned way. That takes too long, and they lost too much recently. They don't want to have to move back that many places, you know, take that many steps backward and start from there. They also don't like how a lot of people who have other attitudes are becoming wealthy entrepreneurs, perhaps. I mean, I interviewed a gentleman who has a lot of companies affiliated with the alt-right. A few years back, I mean, anyone who's successful and has alternative opinions, you know, this is a nice way to totally harm any sort of profit they have been experiencing in recent times. So
the pandemic was just a tool to do that. Yeah, I agree.
We shouldn't.
Go ahead.
We shouldn't take up too much. Let Graham have the floor. It's his show, but no, you go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, sorry, Graham. I'm sorry, Graham. I'm wound up tonight, but it's
oh, that's great,
I'm glad
though.
To hear
that's
you.
Brilliant. I'm sure Graham loves to hear you like this. I do too. I'm sure all the listeners would love to hear you on Graham's show more often, Stephen.
We were hoping your enthusiasm would be infectious, Stephen.
I hope so, man. I hope people out there will catch the bug and go out and talk to your neighbors. You know, find out who your neighbor is because you guys may be about to be invaded by who knows what. You need to know who lives around you and, you know, set up some defenses and just become aware because things are rapidly quickening. Things are escalating a lot. And listen, I have been monopolizing your show here. I'm gonna let me jump off and let you I'll try to. I'll come back for the roundtable, guys. I do need to go take care of something. But yeah, it's a pleasure talking with both of you. It's great to hear you, Graham. I'll be back a bit later.
All right, we'll hold. No,
thanks for your contribution, Stephen.
And we'll hold you to that.
All right. Yes. We'll
pleasure.
Be, all right. I'll be back soon.
All right, thanks, Stephen. Yeah, that number's unbelievable. I'd no idea the unfunded liabilities was 148 trillion. The interest in that, I mean, that's absolutely impossible. Mm-hmm. To get back to a level playing field at that level. I mean, you can't even imagine that kind of number. Your brain is not big enough to imagine such a number. You can't even imagine 1 trillion as expressed in, $1 bills.
Oh, absolutely, Graham. I mean, we can't really comprehend amounts of money in the sort of terms, levels which these people play with every day. And
yeah,
it's just ridiculous how, I mean, the entire system is rigged so that the people with the most money, wealth, and connections can simply create money out of thin air, when they already have enough wealth in their families where they would never have to work. In addition to that, I mean, from what I understand psychologically, it's all about power and control with these people. That's why they're, people like Soros and Rothschild are still driven. They need to impoverish us more and impose more control as the only thing that gives them that adrenaline boost, that little stimuli to the brain, like when someone is addicted to cocaine or is addicted to those likes on Facebook.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what it is. Richard, but there's something beyond insane greed, and that is control. We can see that.
And that's what it is with these RNA-altering vaccines as well. They want to permanently change us on the fundamental DNA building blocks level of our existence, other than these few who will be able to truly be a new species in the future. These, I don't even know what to call them, because I think it's mostly family genetics suffering from psychopathy.
Yeah. No, that's right. I remember reading about this stuff years ago in a book by Constance Cumby called Beware the Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow. And they were speaking back then, these New Age gurus, they were speaking back then about creating a subspecies. Instead of Homo sapiens, they were calling them Homo nauticians. And that would be DNA-altered humans to make them more controllable and less troublesome, more compliant. So,
okay,
yeah, yes. That's a plan. It's been a long time in the making.
We're already doing it, Graham.
Well, you're a bit hot, Johnny.
Who is this? Identify yourself, man. Identify yourself, man.
It sounds like Johnny.
Johnny Ceballos from Texas.
Ah, Johnny in Texas. Hello.
Hi, Johnny. You're a bit hot. Turn your game down a bit.
All right. How about that? Is that better?
That's better. Much better, man.
And you're sounding good as well. Right. Graham, you've been sounding pretty good the way you have it. Keep those settings again. Definitely sounds much better between that and the improved internet company you're with. Improved speed.
All right.
And bandwidth.
Okay, I'm glad to hear it.
Brilliant.
Yeah,
brilliant.
You sound great, Graham. That's good, your internet.
Thanks,
no, but they're already doing it, Graham. I agree.
Absolutely,
look at all these transgenders. Look at all these kids that are on psychotropic drugs out here protesting Antifa. These kids are already inoculated mentally.
Yes.
They're just out of their mind. They're easily controlled by the masses, by one group or the mainstream media for that matter.
Yeah.
I was talking to them yesterday, and they're just lost. They're lost souls.
Yeah, totally. I know what you're saying. Yeah, they're just waiting for the next directive, because they've been socially engineered to be compliant.
Yeah. And it's interesting when you were talking about Seattle. Seattle, I really do believe they want the military police down there. they're going to cause as much chaos as they possibly can to have a military presence. And this election is going to be riding on a lot.
Seattle was already out of control, though, Johnny.
Oh, yeah. I'm well aware of that.
Downtown Seattle was just a, well, yeah. There was just a block after block after block of homeless people.
Well, it kind of died down in the last 4 years. A lot of those Seattle people have moved to California because you could do drugs legally now in California and not get arrested. So a lot of those people have relocated to California. That's why California is a mess.
Oxycontin on methamphetamine.
Now it's black tar heroin. Yeah, used to be that.
I blame the Beverly Hillbillies. They say California is the place you want to be, so they packed up their truck and they moved to Beverly.
Oh, man. That's funny.
California used to be a beautiful state. Now it's not. I was born and raised there. I would never want to live in California. Yeah. Not even if they paid me.
Oh, man. Yeah, and it's never on the news, is it? They never show these inner cities on the news. They don't want people to know how bad things are, you know, down in Skid Row and whatnot.
No, and that's why it's interesting. Why are they bringing all the big tech paying jobs to these broke inner cities such as Seattle and California? It's almost like they want to have a full control over that.
Yeah. I remember saying, seeing an economist on TV, and he said that when the U.S. national debt outstrips the U.S. gross domestic product, you know, when that number gets higher than the second number, gross domestic product, that's officially bankrupt. So as we stand, the U.S. national debt's at just over $26 trillion. And the GDP has dropped back to under 19 trillion. So we passed that stage some time ago. It's impossible to get back from this now.
I've heard of that as well. But there was another economist I was listening to, and it was pretty interesting what he said. He says that the American investment in real estate is around $100 trillion. And every time we raise taxes, we're really stripping away from the real estate agency to pay the debt. And they really want to strip the real estate from the people because then they'll own everything. The whole government will own everything.
Well, yes, that's a large part of what happens each time we have one of these bailouts of the bankers or redistribution of wealth is that the real tangible assets, and that is mostly physical property, land, and buildings, gets more and more concentrated to the hands of the very few. It's definitely, though, a big problem. Also, when you look at just the projections now with this economic lockdown, considering how bad things already were, I mean, we also have economists, gentlemen, who are out there saying it'll be 13 years from now until we hit rock bottom. As far as the after effects of just being locked down during this past spring, the amount that we have. So just keep that in mind. I mean, it'll be 13 years going from now to see everything, all of the negative effects on everything around us in our nation. And so how can you ever recover from that, even if you weren't dealing with the excessive debt? How much money goes straight to these foreign wars with the military and even to other nations when we don't have it for ourselves and our own homeless populations to be fed? I mean, it's ridiculous the amount of money goes to Israel every year that goes to our military to fight wars for Israel every year, and we have people who aren't fed in this nation. So it's just really out of control, Graham.
Oh, it's absolutely out of control. That's it. That's something I've never been able to understand. Never been able to understand that, the amount of money that's shipped abroad. It's not just Israel. America was pumping money into all sorts of places.
Oh, yes.
I know that I know that Trump's checked it back somewhat, but there's still aid going to all sorts of obscure places, that no one really knows about. But the Americans are pumping millions of dollars into their economies every year for no apparent reason. Obama was quite bad for that. He was paying countries all over the world. Well, mind you, Bush started doing it as well. He was giving people aid packages to try and influence the internal politics.
Well, that's because of the United Nations.
Well, that also adds to these color revolutions, and I mean, adds to these NGOs and their motives, these oligarchs such as George Soros, who want to see this change to build up a lot of, well, of course, they love to use the political polarizations to make these changes and to redistribute more wealth and power every time around.
I've been researching that a lot, gentlemen, and I really just don't understand that these NGOs, I understand how they work and function. I just don't know how they get away with murder. For example, in the EU, UK, I've heard that they're even rioting for this George Floyd guy.
That's something I did. Thank you, Johnny.
What is going on?
No, thank you, Johnny. We only have 5 minutes left, and I did want to hear, before Graham closes out, his thoughts on this, because, Graham, I'm amazed at how much, with the help of George Soros and company, Black Lives Matter is all the rage in the UK now. And from what I understand, I mean, you know, a lot of your black populations are from Africa or some, you know, Caribbean islands or something. They're not from the United States. They don't identify with Black Lives Matter. I even heard some recent broadcasts of African-Americans, real African-Americans straight from Africa, in this country, the U.S., complaining about Black Lives Matter and how they're not going to get behind that. And they see it as just a way of being used as a tool by these people, that the native blacks of the U.S. are, they think, more persuaded to go along with than they are. And they're saying, oh, no, we Africans, we're not going to fall for this. And shame on the blacks here in the U.S. who do. And they're speaking out against Black Lives Matter. And in the U.K., I mean, I can't believe it's mostly organic. And from what I understand, a lot of other blacks outside the U.S. don't really identify very much with the United States black population or culture, especially with the rap gangsta culture. You know, they totally abhor that and see it as part of the problem.
Absolutely. Absolutely, Richard. A lot of our blacks are second and third generation Caribbean and Jamaican and stuff like that. And their music and their culture is all about, it's Rastafarian stuff, isn't it? It's
Rasta.
All about God, peace and love and all that stuff.
Yeah, being a musician myself, I'm familiar with all cultures and music from my years, and I'm definitely familiar. It's all positive. It's all very positive music from those regions and from Africa too, for the most part. I mean, you know, there may be some popular singers who will speak out, maybe with not so kind words about homosexuals or something. You know, there I've noticed some of the dance hall blacks, you know, where there have been a couple like gay bashing songs or something, but for the most part, I mean, because they really, you know, they don't believe that's moral. That's all. But for the most part, it's very positive music. Everything I've noticed from compared to the U.S. black music, if you look to Caribbean and African tastes.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, Richard. It's always been that way. U.S. gangster rap and everything is kind of viewed with kind of like disdain here, you know. People don't like it. It's not healthy. It's not cool, and it's not clever, you know. That's pretty much it.
And so it's not organic. I mean, everyone talking about Black Lives Matter there in the UK, and I bet it's mostly white white Europeans who are talking about the Black Lives Matter, organized by Open Society Foundation, right?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. There's loads of liberals here as well that will jump on any bandwagon like that, you know, particularly the LGBTQ crowd and everything. You know, they're wearing their African scarves and doing all that stupid cliched stuff that the news is telling them to do right now. All this kneeling and, you know, apologising for being white and everything. It's just utter nonsense. It's a kind of mental illness. It's a mass hysteria.
Well, I hope we can finish this in the roundtable, but I have a final thought really quick on that. I really do believe some of these new liberals, even some of the middle-aged 40-year-old teachers that are indoctrinating our children, they really don't have a sense of being. They don't have a culture. They don't really know their history. I believe this was on purpose to rid the white people in America, as such sometimes Richard brings up, but I do see this with the white culture in America, with these new liberals. They don't have a culture. They don't know their family background. So they get behind this rap culture, music, and black people or Latinos for that matter. I personally don't need them, and I don't know why black people need them, but these liberals are making a big huss out of this. So it's sad to see this happen. They're using the white people and the black people to tear it down.
Yeah, pretty much. That's the way it's going. Music's quite influential, you know. Music's a way of controlling people. It really is, more so than you realize. It's very influential.
Well, that's why all the white Americans, young Americans, love that rap music stuff. That's why it's interesting that Richard brought that up.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's not, there is a small subculture here that, you know, kind of listen to it, but it's not certainly not mainstream over here, thankfully. Yeah. Anyway, I better wrap up and continue this on the round table. If you're listening, you didn't get a chance to phone in, folks. You're more than welcome to phone in on the round table, which is back to back on my show. We're just about to enter into that. It's always lively. It's always interesting. So, yeah, you're more than welcome to come in and join us. But I'll wind up for now. I'll be back next week at the same time. Someone just pinged up on the screen now. Sorry. Sorry about that. Someone just spontaneously loaded on my on the screen. But so join us in the round table. You're more than welcome to. And if not, we will catch you next week at the same time, Thursday night. So I'll say good night and God bless for now.
Covers count.